You're listening to episode 4 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof outside of Philadelphia.
David, we've formally announced the start of this podcast. We did that on the latest Airplane Geeks episode. So it feels like we're really rolling along, and I guess we should welcome our new listeners.
It's new for us too, but anybody who's just joining us from the Airplane Geeks, welcome aboard, and we hope you like what you hear. And don't forget, if you listen to iTunes, we'd love a review. If you love us, make sure you tell them.
Yeah, that really does help other people find this podcast, so that's greatly appreciated. All right, David, what are we going to talk about this episode?
In this episode, let's see, we're going to start off with a hexacopter for wildlife management, airline pilots that are concerned about UAVs, a hexacopter goes into a crowd, wildfire fighting with something you wouldn't expect, but a predator drone, a seafaring drone, not a UAV, but a pretty cool project nonetheless, building a ground station, and a Chinese attack UAV under development.
Wow, it sounds like a lot, David, so we better get started. Our first item concerns, well, geese. David, I don't know if you have this problem. We have some resident geese that live around here. And one thing about geese is they leave a mess. And there's a beach in Ottawa that has this problem. It's also an issue that comes up, of course, at airports with wildlife. And how do you keep them out? Well, at this Ottawa beach, they've tried to scare off the geese. They've used trained dogs and made loud noises and tried some other things as well. But one guy has come up with an interesting and different kind of method to get rid of the geese.
Yeah, we're actually goose busting. and that's Steve Wombolt's term, who is the of aerialperspective.ca. And he is actually flying a drone, and the drone scares the geese away. But the drone's equipped with more than just the aircraft flying, the hexacopter flying down the road. He's got it, I don't know, pimped out so it will get the geese attention.
Yeah, this is pretty effective, it seems. There's a video on his website which gives an example of this, and he flies this thing towards the geese, and the geese, they exit pretty quickly. This is a Flame Wheel 550 hexacopter, and he's made some modifications. We actually traded a little bit of email with Steve Wombolt, and he's got a patent pending on sort of the methodology for using this to drive geese away. So I don't know exactly what that technology involves. But it seems like kind of yet another interesting application for an unmanned vehicle, David.
Yeah, and you had mentioned geese are kind of evil, but my father, being a base civil engineer, it was always a challenge because geese have an annoying way of taking out airplanes, as Sully Sullenberger would definitely attest.
Sure.
But this is, for airfields, it might not be a bad way to go. You fly the drone up and down the airfield, you get everybody scared away, and it seems to be very effective, and you can start your flight operations. Unfortunately, most airports are near water, so Canada geese like that. So, right. Or I should say Canada gooses, for most people who don't realize geese is not the plural for a Canada goose. But it doesn't harm the animals, it just scares them away, and it protects the people on the beach because people were getting sick from the droppings left over by the geese. Plus, it's just messy.
So I think Steve Wombolt is really onto something here. As he mentioned in one of the emails that we traded, that a variety of different craft could be used to accomplish this. But it is something that, like you say, David, has got applications at airports, where wildlife management is a big thing. I mean, it's not just birds. It's oftentimes birds, but some airports are plagued with deer. Other things that can run across the runway, which obviously presents a difficult situation. The trouble is that the airport environments are pretty attractive to a lot of forms of wildlife. It's almost like a wildlife sanctuary around the airport. And so it's difficult to keep these critters away. So, hey, we got a new approach to this, and I hope this is very successful.
Yeah, and I guess for some of our new listeners, we're going to start throwing around terms with the word copter in front of it. A quadcopter is a four-rotored aircraft, basically at north, south, east, and west. A hexacopter is six rotors flying simultaneously. And an octocopter would be eight-pointed helicopter. So, and basically they're controlled by alternating the rotors and by varying the speeds of the rotors to help the aircraft rotate, turn, etc. So, and it's a very, very common form of UAVs anymore.
Now, we'll put a picture of this hexacopter in the show notes and also a link to the Aerial Perspective site so you can check out the video that they have there.
I guess the next subject would be, speaking of airports, a pilot group expresses concerns over sharing the sky with drones. The ALPA, or Airline Pilots Association, representing 59,000 airline pilots, issued a white paper in April of 2011, Unmanned Aircraft Systems, Challenges for Safety Operating in the National Airspace System, which says the fundamental function of operating an aircraft in a safe manner must be maintained at the same level of safety regardless of the location of the pilot or the levels of automation. Simply put, UAVs and UASs must be held to the same standards that a pilot of an airliner would be flying. Needless to say, right now, the FAA is definitely trying to integrate the airspace together, and we'll be talking about that over a long period of time. The article also brings up, the pilot expresses concern, is outside of JFK, a drone aircraft was flying in the airspace, and it was deemed a hazard, and the FAA had to investigate. So, Max, what do we think about ALPA expressing concerns, since we have a very good friend who is consistently expressing those concerns?
Yes, the pilots that we know, most of them are very concerned about this, and I can understand that. I mean, we're introducing something that doesn't fit within the bounds of the current rules, practice, regulations, and all that. And so I don't think they have anything particularly against drones in the commercial airspace, as long as it doesn't represent a safety hazard to them and the aircraft that they fly. And I think that's reasonable. So as the FAA looks at how to integrate these, it's going to have to really, I think, kind of combine the objectives of a number of different groups, the pilots being one group, the companies that are looking to commercialize unmanned vehicles and systems and so forth. And I don't know how quickly that'll happen. I think the Congress is trying to get the FAA to do that fairly quickly, but the issues are pretty complex. And I think everybody's going to want to weigh in on this one as this gets sorted out.
Yeah, what was interesting about this article also was evidently on March 4, 2013, an Italia pilot reported seeing a drone over Long Island, and the FBI report afterwards said that the drone aircraft had come within 1,750 feet of the aircraft, and that was the altitude, and 200 feet near the aircraft, which is a severe close encounter with an aircraft that could be ingested in an engine, per se. Interesting enough, the first people they took to were the Academy of Model Aeronautics, or the AMA. Now, they have been around forever. Anybody who's flown a radio-controlled airplane should always become a member of the AMA, if anything else, because they offer you like $50,000 worth of insurance in case you crash the airplane into your neighbor's house or something. But the AMA was basically saying it's beyond our control. It wasn't really a radio-controlled aircraft. It was a drone. While they would like drone operators to become part of their organization, they can't be held responsible for someone who's flying an aircraft unlawfully. Mm. There's a blurred line, excuse the pun, between drones and radio-controlled aircraft. And I guess that brings us to our next major topic, which is when drones fall from the skies, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is an accident that happened in Virginia. There was an event being held at a racetrack called the Great Bull Run, and there was a drone copter with a camera that was flying above the stands. And that's a pretty typical kind of application, a great one, some aerial views of the spectators for this event. Well, as you can see in the video, this thing suddenly just veers off to the side and kind of plunges into the crowd. There were some injuries.
Basically, the drone was actually flying over the crowd. Now, anyone who's ever been to an air show knows, and after our last incident at Reno Air Races, you don't fly aircraft over the crowd. Energy maneuvering, especially with air shows, you're always moving away from the crowd. So any maneuver you do is, if something happens, it's going beyond the crowd or away from the crowd or parallel to the crowd. In this case, he was hovering over the crowd and the aircraft failed and crashed into the crowd. It just shows that there's a lot of people out there who have this technology, but it's one of those where you need to think the technology through. And this was a clear case of operating it in the wrong airspace.
Yeah, and that came out in some of the comments that people posted on YouTube associated with the video. As an example, one guy wrote, he says, "I'd never fly over crowds, and I've been flying RC for over 30 years. And several others voiced kind of the same kind of concern that this is not a good idea to operate something like this overhead. You know, like you say, David, I think this kind of brings out that as those who fly these things have to keep these things in mind. I mean, there is kind of an awareness and education, kind of a training sort of issue here, I think, where, you know, we all have to understand what are the lessons that have been learned, what are the do's and the don'ts that we all need to follow. And I don't know if there's a real good sort of comprehensive way to get that message out, but I think it's something that needs to happen.
This is negative publicity for a subject that has more than enough negative publicity. Being unsafe with new technology doesn't mean you're not unsafe. And one of the comments was, we need to police our own, and meaning that other UAV operators need to set standards up, much like the Academy of Model Aeronautics did for radio-controlled airplanes. They set up standards for safety so that it becomes a safe sport. And I think we're getting so much so quickly. I think UAV operators maybe need to step back and start setting up their own organization to set standards so we don't have these incidents, because there's no reason why that with the camera technology, they could be flying away from the crowds and get the same high-definition footage. They didn't need to be over the crowds. So it's a lesson, and basically, hopefully positive will come out of it.
Yeah, and you know, along those lines, if the operators don't police themselves, as that one commenter said, then someone's going to do it for us, which is going to be the government. And they're going to regulate things in ways that we may not want to see. So it's important that we kind of get our act together in this regard. Otherwise, someone's going to get it together for us. And it may not be great.
As we record this, we had news today from the Wall Street Journal. And this was sent to us from a couple of people because they associated this with drones, and it was: remote control helicopter kills man in Brooklyn. A 19-year-old man was killed Thursday when a toy helicopter he was flying was struck him in the head with a law enforcement official. The person was not flying a UAV. He was flying a radio-controlled helicopter. The major difference between radio-controlled aircraft and UAVs is UAVs can be flown beyond line of sight. A radio-controlled helicopter or a radio-controlled airplane always has to be flown in the sight of the radio, so that the worst thing that can happen with a radio controlled aircraft is you get it out of sight and suddenly it loses contact with the radio. UAVs don't need that. They use satellite links and they use other technology like self-flying, where there's confusion now about what a UAV is versus a radio controlled aircraft. I think the AMA is going to probably have to struggle finding out the lines the cross there. But I still think the Academy of Model Aeronautics, it would be a fantastic model for a UAV organization to be built off of.
Yeah, and this was very unfortunate accident with serious consequences. Condolences to the family and friends of the victim here. Also, it was interesting that a couple of listeners sent this in, and that's something that we really like, David, I think, is that...
Yeah, well, I don't think we want to discourage the behavior. We like the interaction with our listeners. So if you have a story or you see something or you think you want us to talk about it or you know of somebody that might make a good guest, definitely send us that, because we want that same sort of rapport and conversation that we have on Airplane Geek.
And, of course, folks can use the email address that we have, which is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Next item, a Predator that's being used in an interesting way, David.
Yeah, this one's not shooting missiles at terrorists. It's protecting people in Northern California due to wildfires. The rimfire in Yosemite National Park was being supported by an MQ-1 Predator of the 163rd Reconnaissance Wing of the California Air National Guard out of Victorville. And it was using its infrared cameras to find the hot spots and the cool spots so they could be more precise in directing the firefighters. And if you've listened to the Airplane Geeks, I know we've referenced that a bit tonight, but it was directing MAFS C-130 aircrafts from the California Air National Guard to fire suppression. So a Predator drone doing good. It's not often you see that.
Yeah, and that's great publicity, I think. For those who aren't familiar, this wildfire has been enormous, what they've been calling the Rim Fire in Yosemite. As I recall, it's something like around a quarter million acres that have been burned by this fire. And so it's a major, major wildfire, and it's been difficult to contain in an awful lot of resources. A number of resources from a variety of different sources have been brought to bear to try to get this thing under control. And, yeah, it's interesting that the Predator drone was one of those resources.
But what I really found interested about this was we're consistently talking about integration into the airspace. And the pilots were located at March Air Force Reserve Base in California, and they were working very closely with the FAA to fly a flight pattern from Victorville up to the rimfire in non-trafficked airspace. However, if necessary, to prevent the drone from interfering with airspace, they were actually flying it with a manned aircraft flying formation with it as it entered and exited the rimfire area. Hmm. That was very interesting, that the thought that was being put into getting it from Southern California to Northern California and the ability to integrate it into that. I mean, the Los Angeles area airspace is probably one of the most congested in the world. So credit where credit's due. The California Air National Guard and the FAA worked really well to provide excellent support for the people who were on the ground fighting those fires.
It might be interesting to find out if that support aircraft that was accompanying the Predator, if it had to take any action in order to, you know, facilitate the transport of the Predator, or could they have just as well not even been there? You know, I wonder how important it turned out to be that they were there.
So if anybody has any news about that, let us know. Okay, well, where there's fire, there's usually water. You want to talk about our non-UAV subject tonight, Max?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. It's not aerial, but it is a drone. It's an unmanned robotic boat that they've called the Scout. And the idea is to make a transatlantic crossing. So it's kind of an interesting project.
Yeah, it was launched in August 24th. And it's slowly making its way by itself across the Atlantic Ocean by a bunch of college kids. And the project's been going on since 2010. It's really interesting technology. If you think about projecting it in the future, there's nothing to say that you can't program a tanker or a large ship, like a container ship with a pre-programmed route that'll just take it across the ocean, and you have nobody aboard it other than the cargo. So it's another way of the people working on UASs and other systems like this thinking out of the box.
Yeah, and this definitely seems like a project that folks should be watching for the lessons that they can learn and the technology that they can apply in other areas. And in fact, you can actually watch it visually. They have a website, the Scout Transatlantic website. We'll put a link in the show notes. And you can actually see on a map where this drone boat is and follow its path across the ocean. So I think that's pretty clever, an interesting way to get people involved and interested in watching the progress of this. All right, we have another item. This is tearing an old laptop apart to build a ground control station. And here we have a guy who's taken some parts from an old broken laptop and some other components salvaged from, well, other places, and he's assembled them in the Pelican case into a ground station. And this is, you know, kind of a do-it-yourself sort of approach, which is, there's a lot of do-it-yourself hobbyists in the unmanned vehicle realm. This is an example of a ground station that's one. You know what it does, David? It reminds me of the early days of the personal computer, where the people were just hacking. People were figuring out how to make things connect, how to make things do things that hadn't been done before. And it was sort of a period of heavy, you know, learning, experimentation, and creativity. And you know what? It feels to me like when it comes to drones and unmanned vehicles, that's kind of the phase we're in now. Doesn't it sort of feel that way to you?
Yeah, it's wide open, and no one will tell you that's a bad idea. This is I when I found this online, I thought this was really cool that someone has taken an old photograph case and hacked up a Lenovo computer and fixed a monitor and came out with something that basically looked like something you'd see from a science fiction show as a piece of military technology. And it's really cool where no one is at least in this industry, no one is saying that's a bad idea. Everyone's saying, well, we'll try it. And if it works, it's great.
And of course, there is sort of the whole personal UAV movement or approach. And one of the great resources for that is the DIYdrones.com website. Folks are unaware of that, that's worth taking a look at. All right, one more item that we have back to the military realm. The Chinese are working on military unmanned vehicles, and we see something called the Sharp Sword. David, doesn't that look a little bit familiar to you?
Yeah, it's basically looks like the X-47B, our favorite catapulted carrier landing drone. It's a flying wing, and it's very similar to the X-47. It'll have a internal bomb bay, and it's roughly the same size, and right now it's taxiing. So China is consistently coming up with new stuff and trying new things and trying to catch up with the rest of the world, and the Sharp Sword is their first attempt at making a combat UAV, which is a completely different class of vehicle that we right now don't have. The Predators and Reapers were designed for reconnaissance. They were not designed to take the battle to the people. That was an added function that they added later. These are purposely designed attack aircraft to be flown off of aircraft carriers or Air Force bases, but to bring the attack forward. And China's trying to catch up.
Yeah, like in other areas of aviation as well. And so the report is that the timetable for this is that they're going to continue the taxiing runs on this thing. And we don't really look forward to a first flight until another year from now, which seems like kind of a long time, but I guess they want to get it right. One thing, David, in looking at the YouTube videos of this is that in the tail end of this, I see what looks to me like a great big engine nozzle sticking out the back end, which you don't see that on the X47B. And the reason you don't is because you stick that nozzle out there, you're going to create a big heat signature that doesn't make it very stealthy.
No, and I think that's probably China's biggest issue right now is, and you being an engine man, you know this, they're not very good with engines. They may be able to get the outside right, but they're not very good with engines. And so it might be semi-stealthy, but it will definitely have a heat signature. Like, they haven't quite figured out how to blend the engines into the fuselage so that when the hot exhaust comes out, basically the fuselage or the wing protect the heat signature that we first started with aircraft like, believe it or not, the SR-71s and Tomcats. They all had ways of wrapping the fuselage around the engines to just try to give a little heat signature less. This has got a big honking engine in the back of it, so it's the only saving grace is that maybe if they do what the Israelis did and they had to extend the nozzle out, that way if a heat-seeking missile takes out the nozzle, you save the airframe.
Huh. Could be part of their strategy. All right, well, it'll be interesting to watch them progress. I'm sure they will. And even if they're behind now, I don't think we should underestimate the abilities of the Chinese to catch up.
Absolutely.
All right, David, I think that's about all the time we have this episode.
Yeah, I tell you, this 30-minute stuff goes quick.
It does.
Well, folks, if you want to find us, our website is theuavdigest.com. On Twitter, we're at UAV Digest. On Facebook, we're at UAV Digest, facebook.com/UAV Digest. But most of all, send us feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. But remember, when you go on iTunes, leave us, and you love us, leave some feedback so other people can find us. But most of all, like we used to say on Airplane Geeks,
tell your friends.
So this is David from Philadelphia.
And this is Max in Hartford.
See you next week.